Well, it's time again for our segment with Randy Cohen. Randy writes the Ethicist column for the New York Times Magazine, and he joins us from our New York bureau. Welcome, Randy.
Hi, Steve.
How you feeling?
Well, better than you, apparently. I'm sorry to hear.
Certainly
you sound like
better
you're suffering.
Me. Awful lot of people wrote in after the first segment a couple of weeks ago, Randy, asking for your advice, and we're going to hear from some of them today. Let's start with Deborah Lawrence of Baltimore, Maryland. Let's call this one Quiet Gloating, if we'd like to, and here's the letter. She writes, I was elated to learn recently that an ex-friend put on lots of weight and that her husband left her. I believe that even during our so-called friendship, she and I relished all the bad things that happened to the other. In confiding to someone how happy I am for her misfortune, I was accused of being evil, malicious, and unethical. So is gloating quietly unethical? Don't lots of people enjoy others' misfortune but not admit to it?
Oh, certainly lots of people do. Who among us is so saintly that he hasn't enjoyed the downfall of Martha Stewart or of a former friend? And there's it may be malicious, but I don't think it's unethical. There's no harm in enjoying her downfall as long as you don't contribute to it, as long as you don't send her a big box of donuts and gravy, say. That ethics is primarily concerned not about thought, but about action, and particularly about the effect of our actions on other people. Thoughts could be sinful if you believe in that kind of thing, but thoughts can't really be unethical. So there are no thought crimes, there are no unethical thoughts, but you could probably make a case that that kind of gloating is not so great for your development as a person.
Well, Deborah Lawrence joins us on the line now from Baltimore. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Well, now, first of all, have you made any headway in resolving in your own mind whether it's okay to gloat over your ex-friend's misfortunes?
Well, actually, I thought I was being very ethical because considering myself to be pretty average, I thought I wasn't the only one doing this kind of stuff. I was just honest about it. So the fact that I was honest about it made me ethical.
Well, I don't, that's true. Okay. Like the honest murderer or the honest bank robber who says, you know, everyone's doing it, at least I'm telling the truth. You get ethical credit for honesty, but I'm a little wary of the everybody's doing it defense.
Well, I mean, I just didn't figure that my emotions were so far apart from somebody else. And I have always felt that, you know, there were people that really don't like it when their friends do well. I wasn't one of those kind of people.
Where there's a limit to your treachery, that's good.
Right.
Whose line is it? It's not enough to succeed. A friend must fail.
It's not my line.
No, I wish
I'll go on record. It's not mine.
Deborah Lawrence in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to the mega mall, or maybe not. Kathy Baratan of Durham, North Carolina writes, about 6 months ago, a new mega mall opened up on the outskirts of my town. This mall is a classic case of sprawl and represents pretty much everything that I don't like about American culture right now. It's a long, long letter. I'll paraphrase the rest of it. Basically, Kathy says she's not going to set foot in the new mall. She disagrees with it, but she cannot find appropriate clothing to outside the mall without limiting her shopping to out-of-town business trips or shopping on the internet. So what's a person with a moral stand against sprawl supposed to do in this situation, Randy Cohen?
I can understand her fear of hypocrisy, but I don't think this is hypocrisy if she shops elsewhere. I think it's necessity. She has to buy clothes, and apparently this is pretty much the only place in or near town to do it. There's a difference between a principled stand and a pointless gesture. Sometimes a battle you sincerely believe in out of deep ethical conviction is simply lost.
So go shop at the mall.
She has no choice. If there's nowhere else to buy clothes, there's nowhere else to buy clothes. But keep fighting for the kind of humane development she believes in.
Well, Kathy Baratan is on the phone now. Did Randy's advice help you, Kathy?
Hi there. Yes, I think it did. I have to think about it for a while to see if I can actually follow through on it.
To make sure that your credit cards are all in working order and have high limits and everything?
No. Well, that's a different problem.
Well, now, wait a minute. What is the ethical dilemma if you don't have any money to spend anyway?
The ethical dilemma for me is the question of practicing what I preach. If I tell other people that stores like this are bad for communities and this and that and the other thing, how can I have any influence at all if I don't practice what I preach? I'm glad that I have his permission now to actually go buy clothes, but I'm still not sure I can go to the mall.
Randy, it sounds like she cannot bear to go.
Then she should be true to her principles by all means, and she should remember that there's a fine American company called Singer that lets you skirt the entire issue.
Sounds like a plan, so to speak.
That was Gandhi's approach, remember, a kind of self-sufficiency. But
he didn't wear clothes, did he?
he wore very small clothes.
He wore a dhoti, a loincloth, basically.
Well, that would be one solution.
I'm not sure what casual business wear means where you work.
And we should mention, in the interest of equal time, I suppose, that Singer is not the only other place you could go.
There are many fine sewing machine companies. Some people sew by hand. Gandhi made his own spinning wheel.
Well, Kathy Baratan of Durham, North Carolina, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to try one more here.
You know, she's much more virtuous than I think either of us are.
And you tried your best to get her to surrender those principles, and she just wouldn't do it.
No. I try to be a force for wickedness and sloth, sort of moral sloth, but she wasn't buying. Not in my store.
Randy Cohen is our ethicist here on All Things Considered. One more letter comes from Michael Keating of Ogunquit, Maine. He asks this: when is it all right to throw away unwanted gifts, particularly Christmas gifts from friends and loved ones? He says, I have a number of items taking up space in the closet and the cupboard that were given to me, but which I really don't care for nor about. I want to toss them in the dumpster, but I feel very guilty. Please advise me. So, Randy, what do you do with that Chia Pet head of Robert Goulet in the closet or whatever you have?
You know, this isn't so much an ethics question as it is an episode of I Love Lucy, isn't it? Isn't this the one when, my rich aunt is coming over and we've got to put the ugly Chia Pet head out of the attic and onto the mantle so we'll get the big inheritance?
Not just I Love Lucy, every sitcom. I think it's a requirement that every sitcom on the air have that episode at some point.
I sense a future for you in television, my friend. A gift, by its very nature, comes with no strings attached. That's what it means to give someone something. Once someone gives it to you, it is yours to do as you wish. You can dump it. You can re-gift. An ugly phrase. I get many letters this time of year that include the word re-gift.
That's from a Seinfeld episode, actually, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
You can take the unwanted present and grind it into a rich garden-enhancing mulch if you want to. Where it gets tricky is when there is genuine feeling attached. The more impersonal a gift, I would say, the freer you are to do what you will with it. If giving the gift to someone else, dumping it, will hurt their feelings, they'll know about it, then I think I would avoid doing it. If you have to rent some storage space, fine. It's you can't put too high a price on having a guilt-free holiday season.
Well, Mr. Keating joins us. Hi, Mr. Keating.
Hi, how are you?
You mind telling us what this fabulous gift was?
Well, I've got a few, actually. First one that is the most pressing is it's a piece of sculpture. It is a woman, sort of almost phoenix-like, rising out of...
How did I imagine this before you even said it? But go ahead.
Well,
please.
There's more, actually. And she's holding up two guys, one in each arm.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
There really is no significance or history that this would bring this out of. Trust me on that.
And how large is this thing?
Maybe 15, 18 inches. The kind that sat well, you know, in the bathroom for a while, but now it's been in the attic for quite a long time.
In the bathroom?
I didn't know where else to put it.
Well, okay.
I liked what Randy was saying earlier, and that does kind of make some sense, that it's given and what you do with it is up to you. So ultimately, I know this is a very lame question. I mean, I should be...
No. I get this question quite a bit, and there is a kind of high road answer to it that can satisfy everything except the people that rent storage space, which is you can pass that gift along to the many charities that are soliciting gifts, especially around the holidays, and to cover yourself, you write a note to the person who gave it to you, and you say, thank you so much for the gift. I've really enjoyed having it, and I'm now passing it along so someone else can enjoy it. Everyone takes the high road here. The person who gave it really knows what you mean, but you've caught them in this sort of moral vice so that they can't complain.
Well, Mr. Keating, it sounds like you've still got some thinking to do.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks very much.
You know, two words that he might also consider as we get towards the holiday, Steve, when he's thinking about those gifts he doesn't like: Yule log.
It could get worse. It could get worse. Michael Keating of Ogunquit, Maine. If you want to pose an ethical question to the ethicist Randy Cohen, you can write us. Randy, I've got no voice left. Why don't you say the email address?
The email address is watc@npr.org and place the word ethics in the subject line.
Good to speak with you again, Randy.
I hope you're feeling better, Steve.